For those who may not be familiar with the term, how do you define folk art?
Well, that's a good place to start. Folk art is generally work done by individuals who are not trained as artists, but folk implies that it's done within a tradition. And not everyone in this exhibition fits that real tightly. There is another kind of subgenre of folk art that's considered, that's called outsider art. And it's a pretty major group of people who don't fit in socially. They live on the fringe of society, often economically and socially, very often, either isolated by choice or by somebody else's choice. And the reason I'm attracted, or we are attracted, I think, to both, is that there's beauty in both of those.
One of the things about folk art and outsider art, I think, that interests people, it's as much about the object as it is about when you look at the object, you imagine what kind of person would have made this object. And I think that's especially true with the kind of outsider art. You look at it and a lot of them have a kind of obsessive quality about them. And I wonder how you think about that and how you think about the difference between kind of appreciating an object like this for strictly aesthetic reasons versus appreciating it for those more psychological reasons.
Well, right. Good question. We like that obsessive kind of quality. There's a passion about what they're doing. I think among the folk and outside artists, that passion leads to them having a voice. They are often people who've not had a voice at all in life. They've not been recognized or acknowledged by sometimes not even by their families, let alone the community. And so once they find their voice by doing art and by stating things visually, it gives them a tremendous kind of sense of direction and power and motivation, and their lives kind of change, and they don't quit until they drop dead, literally.
I think I might add that they don't always start off thinking they're going to be an artist. It's like their wife says, would you just do something about that fence? Would you fix it? And so, you know, he starts getting out rocks, and the next thing he knows, he's building something, and it's not really a fence, it's a sculpture. And, you know, 3 years later, the yard is full, and they have to buy land next door for more. It kind of goes on and on like that. A lot of times, they just, as Willem said, they have kind of a void. Someone has quit drinking, or a woman's, her husband has died. She has a need to do something, so she goes out in the yard and starts making things on the fence. And it just kind of goes from there. And all of a sudden, they're considered to be an artist, but they didn't really start out that way.
You know, I think outsider art, folk art, the fact that they have to be qualified as folk art, outsider art, naive art, whatever, you know, it obviously raises a kind of question about how we define art in the first place. And what do you think it says about our culture and our art institutions that we feel the need to make a distinction between folk art and high art or whatever?
Yeah, I think that many of us want to just call it art. But being in academia and having been involved in writing for a couple of the folk art journals, like Raw Vision that comes out of England and the Folk Art Messenger that's published in this country, being in that world brings with it the need for some kind of definitions. I mean, that's part of what we do as academics. So part of me has that kind of academic interest. And let's see. And so I think the terminology can be useful in that it helps at least to give you a notion of a kind of tradition that these people work in, or not, for that matter. And the implicit in your question is the notion that maybe it should just be called art, and a lot of us would rather that it just be called, you know, art.
A lot of the art in this show has a kind of patriotic element to it. There are a number of pieces that are sort of red, white, and blue, American flags, kind of like celebrating Americanness in some way. And you also being someone who grew up outside of this country, I wonder if there's an ability that you have to sort of see in this folk art something kind of quintessentially American or a kind of pure expression of American culture.
Yeah, good point. It's maybe not even so much the flags and the red, white, and blue, but the entrepreneurial spirit. I think there's something, my father immigrated to this country in the early 50s and then brought the rest of the family over. I think in part because you could start out fresh here. And that whole tradition of, you know, working hard and being honest and having a little creativity, you can sort of make it in this culture. So what I find in a lot of these artists is that whole notion that they, out of nothing, built this body of work that actually now has some market value. In the early days, nobody really was collecting this. And now there's artists who are new in the market and their pieces go for $50,000 a piece. You know, it's just quite incredible. There's a painting that we bought from Howard Finster for $80 that the High Museum in Atlanta bought for $20,000 because they wanted to add it to their collection.
On that note of the commercial aspect of this whole enterprise, there's kind of a paradox there, you know, where these folk artists and outsider artists and people who are kind of appreciated because of the way that they are outside of the art establishment, then kind of getting brought into that fold, it kind of sets up this weird catch-22.
Yeah, and there's a handful of artists that have been able to kind of maintain their own integrity, but some then start doing large editions of things. Oh, this piece is popular, I'll make 100 of those, you know? And so there definitely is a potential kind of problem in beginning to market these people. And I made the mistake one time of collecting some of Mary T. Smith's work, and she only has a couple of small pieces, I think, or maybe one painting in the show. But I sold some to other collectors that I had picked up from her, and then the word got out, and the president of my college went out there some years ago, and he said there was nothing out there. She, you know, Mary T. Smith had sold out. I mean, she'd sold all the work, and so that's another problem, you know. It's like you think, God, this work is exciting, and I want to show it to you, and okay, I'll sell you a piece. And the next thing you know, a lot of collectors are showing up and knocking on the door and buying it. And so there's some very odd things that have happened over the years, and I really like the people that are able to retain their kind of integrity and continue to do it and not be really affected by that. But That takes a fairly rare human being to not be affected by the sales.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us today.
Well, thanks for your interest. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure.